This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome into Pirate Basketball Overtime right here on the Sports Objective. Pirates get a big win, 64-60 at home, and they're 11-4 at Williams Arena, Menjis Coliseum. They get the big win over USF. They played last week and then right again. With us right now, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you?
Doing well, Dave. It really wasn't a whole lot different than the game we saw last Thursday night. I guess it was down in Tampa. But you'll take them any way you can get them, and we found a way to get it done there in the final, I guess, 7 or 8 minutes, something that we have not done on a few occasions this year. But you'll certainly take them any way you can get them, right, Coach Mack?
Yeah, for sure. They're hard to come by, and they've been hard to come by since Christmas for this bunch. And it was a good win, a gutsy win. And they could have given it up there because South Florida made a nice run, and they were pounding the offensive glass. And, South Florida did a good job of taking care of the basketball for most of the second half and then a few key turnovers, and the Pirates got back in charge. Great win for Coach Dooley.
No doubt. 14-13 on the year. And by the way, I'm going to do my Bubba impersonation. No excuse for Greenville, North Carolina, Saturday afternoon. Perfect time, especially if you're the Rosenbaums and they drive like 3.5 hours. They're the most awesome Pirates in the world, driving like all baseball games, basketball, football, 3.5 hours each way. They're going to do that so they won't get home too late. But a 4 o'clock matinee against Tulsa, a winnable game, Coach. Coach Dooley has a chance to go 15-13. And then they would have to wait a whole week for Saturday against Wichita State. That's a winnable game, but it is on the road. But right now we need to get Williams Arena packed on Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m.
It makes such a difference when it's full and you have that home court advantage. And it would be nice to have something tangible for the fans to say, you know, we're making progress. If you watch the basketball program, you know they've made progress, but it would be really nice to post that winning season and to finish strong here for Joe and his bunch. And you look back to the season, they were playing so well early. And then between COVID shutdowns and some injuries here and there, and the record doesn't look like the program has made that much progress, but they really have.
You're right, Coach. That was one of the points I was going to bring up tonight. People forget how bad things were last year with COVID, but this year we had, was it a 2-week break? It seemed like it was forever even this year. But we forget about that. Between that and the Suggs injury and a couple other injuries, then if you don't think Brandon Suggs is a big deal, ask about the game tonight. And at down the stretch, we were playing Murder's Row against one of our key pieces. I mean, without one of our key pieces in Brandon Suggs. He is like one of the most blue-collar players we've ever had. He does so many things, tangible and intangible, things you don't see, things you do see. He took another charge tonight, Coach. Down the stretch was huge. He's always doing the little things like that that really make a difference.
He had a big offensive rebound. You mentioned the charge. He got some loose balls, and then he scored for a while when we were having a little bit of a drought. And I like to claim Suggs, just even though I don't really know him, but he went to Massanutten Military in Woodstock, Virginia, my hometown.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah, now, Dave, as far as Brandon Suggs, 15 points tonight, finished, also had 6 boards. But 9 of those 15 points came from the charity stripe. He was 9 out of 13. And 2 of those 4 misses were right there on the final 2 free throws of the game when we were up 4. But talking about a putback, and we saw plenty of putbacks by South Florida, but the big one for us came there when we were struggling to score, and like Coach Mack just referenced. And you had, I think it was Zoe Frank, missed a shot in the paint, and Suggs came from the right side of the basket to the left side to make a nice putback.
No doubt. I'll tell you one thing, Coach. The Frank weighs 280 pounds. I'm glad I don't have to guard him, aren't you? He's a big – he's a hoss. I was trying to explain to my son. I said that tonight. He is a big, big fella, big guy, and very mismatched because he's so athletic.
Yeah, and he works hard. And, you know, the game kind of deteriorated into a – neither team could shoot. Neither team was going to make many threes. East Carolina's getting to the free throw line, and South Florida's getting second shots. And it kind of you know, worked that way out all the way to the end, and the free throw line made the difference. And both teams were turning it over at an alarming rate in the first half, and then both teams cleaned it up a little bit. But right there at the end, ECU turned the defense up a little bit, and I think South Florida honestly just got a little bit sloppy with the basketball and had some critical turnovers, which led to some easy baskets, which there weren't a lot of easy baskets tonight.
Yeah, like you said, Coach, there with about, I guess it was 7 or 8 minutes to go, South Florida was up, I think, at least three, and they had the ball. And Achiuwa, you know, he was wide open, and then they rifled a pass into the end zone bleachers there. So, you know, that was one where Brian Gregory was pulling his hair out and had a chance that he would have, you know, had a wide open layup to go up five. And instead, I think we came down and scored.
Yeah, we had that run, Coach. I mean, that's what basketball is about. But there down the stretch, I think it was an 8-0 run late. And that was really the difference for me in the game is that I don't know what it is about East Carolina this year, but we have gone on – it seems like every time we have a post-game show at overtime, we're talking about the droughts, guys. We've had some droughts where we can't make buckets. It's not like a minute long. It's several minutes. And I don't care who you're playing, even if it's South Florida, arguably what I think they're the worst team in the league right there, or the best team in the league. You can't have droughts like this. I just don't know. How do you correct it, Coach?
Get more good players. Yeah. I mean, if your scoring literally is coming from one or two or even three spots, it's going to be hard at some point during the game. You really have to have a minimum of four scores on the floor to keep the defense honest. And obviously it would be helpful if you had five, if you had some post presence and you had a four man who could stretch the floor, which they do a little bit in that regard. But there's some lineups that Coach Dooley has to put out there due to injuries and everything else that, you know, that just lack a little bit. And when the defense can narrow it down to one or two or even three scores and really concentrate on them, you're going to have some droughts.
Yeah, Coach, I mean, it's really interesting when you watch this team. They go through these incredible droughts, like Dave said. I mean, you're talking 5, 6, sometimes 7 minutes. I mean, what can you do, like, schematically? I mean, obviously, like you said, I mean, you just need the Jimmies and the Joes, right? But from the X's and O's standpoint, I mean, do you think we could try to, like, do a little more two-man game with Vance and Newton up top? Or what can we do to kind of get out of that? Because it really hurts this team.
Well, I think there are several things. Number one, obviously, get more good scores on the floor. Number two, I think look for your opportunities in transition maybe a little bit more. You know, 3-on-3 is a whole lot easier basketball game than 5-on-5. So even if it's a little bit of a delayed fast break, I think transition is one place you can do it. The other place is some second shots, some offensive rebounds, because just by definition, if you catch the ball on an offensive rebound, you're close to the basket. That means you've got a higher percentage of being able to make a shot and or get fouled. And then, like you said, you know, I am sure that, you know, Coach Dooley's done this a long time. He's a really good coach. Love watching them practice. Love watching them practice better than I like watching them play, to be honest. But that's a whole other story. But they do some things to ISO their best players, and they do some two-man games on the backside where they look like they're going one way and reverse it, a little misdirection, and try to get the two-man game on the backside with a curl cut, a pop out, and those kind of things. I think they do a lot of good things. But when you're just not getting easy baskets, it really is hard to sustain 5-on-5 all the time, especially the second time around in the league. And the droughts have gotten worse as the season went on because there's so much information out there, you know, between Synergy, the video stuff, and all the analytics and that kind of thing. You know what every single player does well, and you take those things away, and your kids get better at, you know, you can give a scouting report in November and they might get some of it, but you give them a scouting report this time of year, they know what's going on and they know how to implement that when they get to the floor.
Coach,
especially when you played 6 days ago, right?
Say it again.
I was joking as far as East Carolina and South Florida having played just six days ago. Yeah. I mean, these games were supposed to be 5-6 weeks apart, but because of the COVID situation that the Pirates had in late December and early January that forced this game as well as the Wichita State game to be postponed/canceled.
Coach, you made a great point about the transition game. This, you know, and I have nothing against Jaden Gardner. I've said it a million times, but the one great thing about this team, it's built for transition, where I don't think the Jaden Gardner era was built for transition. And this game is now, the game now is a lot more exciting, a lot more fun, to the point of where you said, and one of the things about South Florida, give them credit, is they shortened the game where they made it a score where they had a chance to win. If we get out on transition, like you're talking about, we could have really pulled away maybe earlier in the second half. And that's one thing that we've got to find a way to do if we're going to have any kind of chance in the tournament or even the last two games, is to use a transition game.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's part of their plan, but it doesn't work out every night. And you talk about Jaden Gardner. That's so funny. I'm watching both games side by side on the screens, and he's in the perfect offense for him. He can literally walk up the floor if he wants to. It doesn't affect Virginia at all. It's hilarious. The guy, he starts out, he heads to the other end, and here comes the point guard, and he and the point guard get to the other end about the same time. It just struck me as you were talking that he is in the perfect offense for him right now.
No doubt.
He's a stud, though. He is still a stud.
I miss him. I'm not knocking him. And he had to make a personal decision. I was just saying, as far as the style of play, I like it much more now. I'm a fast break kind of guy. And if you have an opportunity like that, take advantage of it. Because like you were talking about earlier, these shots are hard to come by, but man, if you can get a layup, I'd rather take that or a big slam dunk on our end of the floor. We got some, Bubba, are you ready for, we got some comments, Coach. A lot of people love Coach Mack and they want to chime in tonight. So you can do so on Facebook if you're watching live or streaming live on YouTube. And we've got some comments that we were going to put up here for you, Coach, and some questions.
Yeah, B. Page chimed in. He said, in his opinion, the difference in the game was South Florida had a tough big guy who could rebound. I mean, in terms of South Florida having a chance to win.
Yeah, the game's not close if the big guy isn't having a double-double. And they also had some other athletes that helped them offensive rebound. But, no, that's the only reason they were in the game. ECU did a lot of things well enough to separate themselves, but the offensive rebounds just kept them alive.
I know the guys were talking about how close we are in these games, that if we win a few more of them, we would have a chance at the NIT with the games remaining we have left.
No, I mean, and that's something, you know, if you'd have won some of those that got away, like
that's what they're talking about, not right now.
Yeah, but no, under the current circumstances, no way, and the NIT is even a possibility. But if you finish strong, then there's a chance, depending on what the administration decides to do with a strong finish. I mean, you could have a chance, you know, to play in the CBI if you wanted to.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Chi was he's a handful down there for Sal. He's an impressive young player when you look at them. I mean, 18 points tonight. He was 6 of 10 from the floor and 10 rebounds. I mean, he's a load down there and still a pretty young player. So he's somebody to watch out for in the future. But I got to say, I mentioned this before the show, I thought in the last 4 or 5 minutes there, when it really counted, I thought Luggie did a really nice job on pick and roll. And I thought he did a really good job on the interior there and stepped up defensively. So, you know, he struggled at times throughout the game to contain him, but when it counted, he did a nice job.
No question about it. And Bubba, do you want to put Charles's question that we had earlier, a tough question for Coach Mack?
Yeah, Coach Mack, you obviously know what a challenging job this is. And yes, Coach Dooley, has some things going for him that maybe past coaches didn't, but at the same time, definitely lagging behind the American Athletic Conference competition in budget and so forth. And Charles was asking, what your thoughts are on Coach Dooley and, his situation. He's in year four of a 5-year contract.
And I think it was so.
Well, I've got a couple thoughts on that. First of all, he does. Coach Dooley has done a nice job of working with the administration. He has their confidence, and there is more support. There are more resources than ever in ECU history for the basketball program. And Coach Dooley, got that on the front end. I'll come back, but these are the things we have to do, whether it's chartering or the recruiting budgets or, the bells and whistles, the dressing up of Minji's, all those things are positives. Joe Dooley can win. Joe Dooley did a great job here the first time. Should never have been let go the first time. That's my opinion, and I think it's a fact. But he knows how to recruit. He's attracted good staffs. It's hard to keep them, and that doesn't anything. That's not a reflection on Joe. It's not a reflection of the support for the program. It's a reflection of where East Carolina is in the college basketball world. And if you're a young guy and you're trying to make a name and you do a good job here and you move to a better job, if you're Steve Rockefort and you move to Texas A&M, you understand those kind of moves. And still, Coach Dooley's been able to attract really good people to replace the folks who have left. So I don't think East Carolina basketball has ever been in as good a shape as it is right now. Matt goes back away. You guys have been fans for a long time. You may know better than me, but I don't think it's ever been as good as it is right now in terms of the direction it's heading. Will Coach Dooley stay? I have no idea about that. I was a little worried last year, to be honest, when the Kansas thing popped up, but he chose to stay. So knock on wood, let's hope we can keep him. If you're a Pirate fan, you should be hoping we can keep Joe Dooley here for as long as he wants.
Well, guys, what I heard today, and I've been asking people close to the program as far as the basketball program, people that work with them inside the administration. I think when things were going south with Suggs out, with the Murders Row, there were people in the administration that I heard that there was kind of rumblings, okay, Joe's not going to make it. But all of a sudden, since Suggs has come back, the team is fighting hard. They're still winning games. Joe hasn't lost the team in the locker room, so to speak. They're fighting hard at practice. Coach, you've been to practice. We haven't. But I'm hearing that they're fighting really hard. They're listening to Joe. They want to win really bad for Joe. So it's gone from basically looking like that it was inevitable that Joe was not going to be back, meaning he was going to not be kept, to now it's kind of a wait and see on how they finish. And to me, the way Sunday was a real dagger in the heart, another three buzzer beaters on the year. Should have, could have, would have, we didn't. But we get a nice win tonight. If you can get a nice win Saturday afternoon, that puts you at 15 wins. You have to wait a week to make up that Wichita game. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I would hope that, even Jeff Charles on Monday night gave a nice endorsement to Coach on the Joe Dooley show late in the – if you go back and watch on Facebook, about the 39-minute mark. Jeff Charles has seen 34 seasons of bad basketball. Well, not bad basketball, but a lot of bad games.
So. Let me tell you a Jeff Charles story. I don't even know that he'll remember this. We were somewhere on the road in Conference USA. And Jeff and I've known each other forever. So this is all in good fun. But after a particularly tough game on the road somewhere, maybe it may have been Hattiesburg, if memory serves, you know, we were trying to pack up. We had a charter. We were trying to get to the plane. I said something about it. He said, "Oh gosh," he said, "you don't know how hard these things are to watch." I said, "Jeff, they're no fun from the other side of the floor either." He said, "Oh, okay. I don't know why that jumps out at me when you bring up Jeff Charles, but yeah, I agree with Jeff Charles. He, and I would tell any Pirate fan the same thing. Their college athletics is full of, and you guys know, you all follow the game, basketball and football. There are tons of schools that have gotten rid of a coach and never recovered, never got mm-hmm. back to where that coach was or any better. And I can spout off a whole bunch of examples, and you all can too.
Yeah, everybody's always so eager to find the next coach. Everybody, it's just like the trend, you know. Everybody wants to find that next greatest coach, and the grass isn't always greener. I mean, sometimes you have to have patience. You have to show some restraint, and let things run their course. And in this case, you know, I'd love to see Coach Dooley have a few more years to be able to finish this thing off. But I guess it's a sign of the times, Coach.
Bad times.
And Coach, we had last week, you remember, Bubba, when we had Coach Steele on, he was bragging about you, Coach. He said he was talking about how many great coaches East Carolina's had, but we really haven't had the commitment to the program. And, you know, replacing a coach every few years is not the problem. If that were the case, we would be the top of the American and going to the tournament, the big dance every year. Replacing a coach every few years has not worked. I've heard that from a lot of my close Pirate friends who I've texted to get their feelings on privately on the matter, because we've tried really hard to be objective. We are supportive of the administration, but at the same time, we just don't want the same mistakes. Look at Joe Dooley wants to stay in Greenville. His whole family wants to stay in Greenville. The last time we got rid of a coach on the gridiron, Coach Ruffin McNeil was an East Carolina guy through and through, and we should have never you were talking about recovering. If we hadn't got Mike Houston, we would be in really bad shape. Thank God we got Houston, and we almost screwed that up.
No, you're exactly right. It is a sign of the times. You know, where people are awfully anxious and not very patient. But you know, you look back through, and I don't know if you can be patient if you're an AD anymore in some situations. But think back to. Here's a name that East Carolina fans won't want to hear, but Frank Beamer, you know, didn't do very well at all, and finally was faced with an ultimatum by his AD, Dave Brain, said, "You've got to win at least 8 games." And I think they lost their first 3 games of the season and then won 8 in a row or something. And then he goes on to a Hall of Fame career. And there are tons of examples like that. There are also tons of examples of, I mean, let's run off Phil Fulmer. He's only won a national championship. They finally, after 3-4 coaches and 20 years, look like maybe they might be headed back in the right direction. But and these are expensive decisions too. It's not like the next guy is going to come in for less money and less resources. Those things too. And if you're going to give the next guy more money and more resources, why not give it to the guy you've got right now, especially a guy like Joe Dooley, who has proven that he can do this.
Coach Mack, how about the ultimate example, guys? I was a little boy in Durham, North Carolina. Tom Butters, I remember it very well. There were a lot of people in Durham that thought Coach Mike Krzyzewski would be fired after a few years, right? After that 83 season especially, where Virginia just killed him in the ACC tournament and with Ralph Sampson and company. But, you know, a lot of people around 83, 84 thought Coach K would be gone. Just think about Duke. For all you basketball fans out there right now, and East Carolina and Duke are not on the same planet. I know how they have more money and all that, but just think about firing a coach. If they had fired Coach K after 3 years, where would that program be?
Great example. We played them in the, I don't know if it was 81, 82. I was at Auburn. We had Barkley was a freshman, and we played in the Iron Duke Classic. You're going to love this. We play in the Iron Duke Classic. We're going to play them in the finals. It's William and Mary and Davidson are the other two teams in the tournament. And things didn't go quite as expected. Davidson beat William & Mary in the championship game while we played Duke in the consolation game in front of maybe 200 friends and family. Nobody was there. It wasn't like it is today. And gosh, you know, does he go down as the greatest of all time? He certainly at least is in the discussion.
Coach, we have some excellent comments and questions rolling in on Facebook as well as YouTube. Going back to our discussion as far as the grass isn't always greener and making that decision to fire a coach that's proven specifically at that institution. Charles brings up a great one. Charlotte getting rid of Bobby Lutz and the years of struggles they've had over the last, I guess, what, decade and a half?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then B. Pays chimes in once again. He says that, in his opinion, that Coach Dooley would stay if he gets an extension. If not, then he's not going to go into year five, a lame duck, as most would term it. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that situation? I know Steve and I go at Hoist the Colors and give him credit. He had a conversation with John Gilbert about that topic here within the last couple weeks. And he said that, and John Gilbert, that is, that in his opinion, that in all of his years in athletic administration, that he didn't know that he had ever been asked that, or that one of his coaches had been asked that. Well, even if they haven't been asked that, you know it's going to be fed to them by the opposition, right?
Oh, yeah. A coach can't – you can't coach. You can't recruit, which is the main thing, unless you have a contract where you can tell the kids that you're going to be here, and they're the kids and their families. And kids are savvy. They know what's going on. You must have time left on your contract if you're going to go out there and sell this institution.
No question about it. You know, with that very fact of – let me ask one quick question, Bubba. I forgot to ask you, Coach, as far as the extension is concerned, add to that, if you're Dooley, I was hearing that if he gets a one-year extension, that's like embarrassing. He probably still won't go. Would you say it would take probably a three-year extension for him to be happy?
What does he have left? I haven't been following that.
One year.
Yeah, he's in year four of his 5-year deal. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. I would think a minimum of three-year extension. And I'm not in the negotiating business, but I would certainly, if I'm the athletic director, I have to understand as a coach the problems that he would face if he didn't get. 1 year would be kind of a slap in the face. And this is a guy who has some equity out there, guys. He can go anywhere he wants to go. You think Bill Self wouldn't make room for him on his staff? And think about this, too. The Power Five schools, they're making their own rules right now. It's not like there are only three slots on every staff. There are plenty of slots where he could go and do a lot of things that would help a lot of programs. And he is a valuable guy in this business.
You also had Johnny Robertson chiming in. Johnny says, I think that Coach Dooley does a tremendous job keeping this team composed. Whether they're down by double digits or trying to hold on to a late game lead, they never seem flustered, and they rarely, if ever, have on court disputes with one another.
That's a great observation. Yeah. I don't recall any of those kind of situations where they have any kind of problem. They all seem to be on the same page, and that's a direct reflection of the coach.
And to that point, very quickly, Dave, yes, in the back half of the schedule is undoubtedly easier than that stretch where you had Houston, Memphis twice, et cetera. But at the same time, no matter what the schedule's been down through the years, as you know, Coach, East Carolina has historically, with the exception of like Lebo's team that won the CIT, you know, limped down the stretch and really struggled going into conference tournament and very rarely win a conference tournament game.
Yeah, you can only trick them for so long.
That was the very point I was going to make, Bubba, as far as conference play. Coach, that Houston game was such a bust. So, oh, my gosh. It was just – I was afraid about that happening, like when I saw the schedule and just saying – payback, you know, and we had no chance in that game. Otherwise, every other game we've had a chance to win. And there's a lot of times where we used to say, I remember the basketball, being a huge basketball fan that I am, I love the program. There's nobody, I was there in 1993 when we're at the Big Dance, we're playing in Winston-Salem against North Carolina. I was one of 50 students that won a lottery to be there. And I'm going, why was that? I mean, that's been a long time ago, Coach. 1993, a long time ago.
Yeah, it has been. And, bless his heart, Walter Williams, we were having breakfast out at Yoder's one day, he and Marie and my wife, Jean, and I. And he said, Mac, he said, I got to tell you, I just don't have time for another 5-year plan. and I said, I understand.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, I mean, the game has changed so much from a recruiting perspective here in the last few years with the transfer portal. And, you know, you look at Joe Dooley, for example, right? He's able to bring in Vance Jackson this year. He gets him for 1 year. You'd love to have him for at least another year. You worry about guys, you know, like Newton, you know, you worry about these guys leaving potentially for quote unquote bigger programs. What are your thoughts on this, you know, this modern era of the transfer portal? Would you prefer to coach in this era with the portal or beforehand if you had a preference, if you could choose one?
I absolutely hate it. How is that?
That's like, strong enough that works for me?
No, and I'll tell you why I hate it. People have said these things about the transfer portal, that it doesn't make kids work through adversity. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And the other thing is you can't really be rewarded for hard work where you bring young guys in and develop them because they're going to get poached. And it doesn't matter whether you're at the bottom end of the ACC and get poached by the top end or if you're in the American and get poached by the SEC. It doesn't matter. There's always a pecking order out there. I hate that. I mean, there is no 5-year plan. There is no building for the future. You have to try to win right now. And that's a huge change for the mindset that nobody wants to hear that you have a young team. You need to win right now. And that's a huge difference. But I do think it's a disservice to the kids. And I'll tell you what I would do. I would change the portal this way. Okay, we're going to have the portal, right? It looks like it's here to stay. So the kids have some autonomy. I would change two things. Number one, I would have a limited amount of time, just like signing day, where you can enter the portal. If you don't enter the portal there, you're staying where you're at. And the second thing is I wouldn't open the portal to anybody until they've been at a school for 2 years.
Yes.
If they want to leave after 2 years, have at it. But I mean, I can't tell you how many kids I would have had. They would have left the first week.
Yeah.
I was going to bust their tail. And you recruit them, you de-recruit them. Then you re-recruit them. And now you're recruiting every player every day. I'll also tell you this. Talking about coaches adapt. They will adapt. But this is not fair. But I will say this, and I he may not even want me telling this, but Buzz Williams, like him, don't like him, whatever. At the end, he started doing this several years ago. At the end of the basketball season, he loaded up his staff. Of course, if you're at Virginia Tech or an ACC school, you load them up in the private plane. You don't load them up in the suburban. So you load them up in the private plane, and they would go spend a day with every kid's family. Spend the whole day with them so that they would be on their side, so to speak, that they would be reinforcing the things that he was telling them. And that they would know the expectations he had for their sons and also what expectations they should have of the staff. Mm-hmm. And I think every coach is going to have to do some version of that. But he was doing it ahead of time. And now it makes absolute total sense. And I think it was one of the smarter things I've ever seen a coach do.
And Coach, I think you really nailed it with the 2-year point. I mean, you look at some of these kids, right? I mean, think about you're a 17, 18-year-old kid. You're off to college for the first time. Your first year, you're still homesick. You're still thinking about high school. You know, you're not mature enough yet to really make that decision oftentimes. And so they rush into it. So I think that's a great point. I think you nailed it with that. That's what I would love to see. 2 years before you can enter the portal. Because what it does is it gives these kids an opportunity to grow up a little bit, get away from home. experience college, you know, and come to appreciate their, you know, their university. So I think you nailed it. And Bubba, I know you had a follow-up to that.
Yeah, actually, one of our viewers had a follow-up on Charles chimed in with a couple of questions. The first is related to this topic, more specifically on how the transfer portal, in your opinion, Coach, does it help or hurt a school like East Carolina? You lose a guy like Jaden Gardner to Virginia, but then you pick up a guy like Vance Jackson that's a proven commodity.
Yeah, and it does, giveth and it taketh away. So, but I think it depends on your coach and how connected he is, how connected the staff is. I had an assistant, this is way back in, gosh, maybe the early 90s. I had an assistant who taped every ACC basketball game and every SEC basketball game. And then he went back and watched, and he wasn't watching the game. He was watching the bench. He was watching to see the body language of the guys on the bench, who was a little bit unhappy, who might he talk to their high school coach or their AAU coach. You have to do all kinds of creative things. And this was before there was a transfer portal. We were just hunting transfers in general. And I thought, again, I thought that was just brilliant on this guy's part. I will tell you who it was. It was a guy named Henry Dickerson, who was on my staff at Chattanooga and eventually got the job there and then was the coach at North Carolina Central. Great guy, did a great job. But again, he was ahead of his time. He would be great in today's game. He was already looking for those kind of things. But yeah, I it can help if your coaches are connected, and it can hurt you if your coaches are not connected. And you must be – this is an overused term, and I don't even like the term. You must be a player's coach. You must have a relationship with those kids where they trust you. Because if you don't, all your good players are going to be gone eventually.
And Coach, so the very fact you were talking about that with not to pick on Gardner again, but with Gardner, we got a lot of great things. But one of the things that's been missing from this team, you're talking about shooters. We didn't have the three-point shooting that we have now. It seems like this year and a lot of games we've had over the last three or four years, Bubba is a stats guy, but he and I always talk about you have two or three more threes in a game and you win the game. We have so many that games over the last few years are so close under the Dooley era that if we just had some, I know it's like, yeah, the big F, but if you just have some 3-point shooting, you win a lot of those games.
Yeah. And you talk about the close games. We've talked about them several times, you know, this year and in the last few years with Coach Dooley. And see, from a coach's perspective, I look at that as progress. I'll never forget Hubie Brown made everybody mad when he was the coach of the Hawks, because he's getting beat by 15 and he's calling a timeout with a minute to go and another one with 30 seconds to go and running a set play with 15 seconds to go. And he was trying to lose by less than 10. And if he was down by 10, he was trying to lose by less than 5. And it didn't matter for that team. They were still losing the games, but those kids understood. Play through the whole thing. We're going to eventually win those games. And he did. You know, a year or 2 years later, he's playing for a championship in the NBA. And everybody criticized him. The other coaches hated it. The players, I think, hated it. But there was a method to the madness. Playing close games is a sign of progress.
Now, Coach, Charles chimed in several minutes ago, but he was just – I know you've – been out of it in terms of coaching for several years, but at the same time, you've been around the game. So can you give us an idea? He was asking as far as chartering a flight, you know, what that cost. I mean, obviously it will vary, but just a ballpark figure there.
Well, I haven't done it in a while, although we did a lot of studying of that while we were here and trying to, you know, talk Coach Holland into chartering some planes. And we had some that were as little as 20,000. We had some that were as much as 60,000. And then going to El Paso was something incredible, like 100,000. But yeah, and depending on what size plane, do you get a jet? Do you get a prop jet? You know, those kind of things. And I don't think they get to charter every single time either. I think they're still going commercially a couple of times where it makes sense. But gosh, I'll tell you this: having been at schools where you charter and been at schools where you don't charter, you're a whole lot fresher in February when you're chartering every flight. Not only the coaches, but the players, more importantly, those legs recover a whole lot quicker when you're playing a road game at Tampa and you're home in bed by 11 o'clock.
Hey, Bubba, hey, I tell you what we do. We've been, and hopefully we can get you involved next year. With hopefully Dooley will be with us, but we want to do a tip-off classic dinner where we like a fundraiser, and I hope that we can get you and a lot of former coaches and players to come back. But we really want to do that to raise money for the basketball team. If nothing else, let's do it to charter flights for our team.
It's invaluable.
Johnny Gardner very quickly mad and chimed in on Facebook saying that when Coach Dooley came in from Florida Gulf Coast, that he had a plan that the landscape was at the time. And this happened to everyone, but in his opinion, it hit harder on us. No one knew what the transfer portal would turn into, what it has. Also, you had COVID, name, image, and likeness. We talk about the culture in football and baseball. We're, in Johnny's opinion, witnessing it being built in basketball, and I would agree.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that too. And again, it's because Joe has been in different situations. He's been out in New Mexico and Kansas and Florida, and he's been a variety of places, and he has seen different ways to approach it, different ways to coach the game, but also different ways to build a program. And if I'm John Gilbert, I'm really happy that Joe Dooley is my basketball coach.
Not only that, Coach, but even Coach Dooley has told myself and others the APR when he took over. I'll just put it nicely: he wasn't told all about the APR, exactly how bad it was when he took over, and it was not good. And Coach, in a matter of a short period of time, turned that around. That alone for me would make me keep Dooley. But of course, it obviously has to take progress on the court. But that was a bad way to start as a head coach, as the APR was so bad. And you have the experience of that, and not us.
Yeah, it was horrible when we got here. Obviously, Coach Harrion had, who I really like and is a great coach, he had taken a few gambles there at the end of his tenure here, and we had to pay the price. But yeah, here's an interesting question for you though, guys. You all keep up with everything between portal, NIL, college football playoff expansion, realignment. When was the last time you heard anybody talk about APR? When was the last time you heard the APR even mentioned by anybody? I don't even know if they're checking it anymore. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard APR mentioned until the show in the last 3 or 4 years. There's too much else going on.
Excellent point.
Great point, Coach.
True. Very true, Coach.
Now, before we move on and very quickly take a look around the country. I know you call some Virginia Tech games, Virginia games, and both on the men and women's side. But one final thing that I wanted to bring up in terms of East Carolina basketball, with you having spent all those years with the program, both as an assistant coach and as a head coach, and then also just now living in Greenville and being familiar with the program, just talk about the atmosphere. Obviously, winning will fix a lot of things, but just in terms of, marketing, concessions, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I have some crazy ideas about that stuff, but the bottom line is Mingy's is Mingy's, right? Williams Arena, Mingy's Coliseum, it is what it is. They've put some lipstick on it. They're trying to do some things. And, of course, the practice facility is as nice as anybody's, and that makes a grand entrance into the arena too. But the best marketing is winning. You can entertain. And here's my theory about marketing. And maybe this isn't what you signed up for when you asked that question, but here's my idea about marketing. Make the games comfortable for the fans. Parking, reasonable concessions, comfortable seats. That's the main thing. Other than winning, that's the main thing. And pour all your money into what the coaches tell you they need. And it might be different with each coach. You know, he may have, one coach may feel like we need to spend a little more here. One wants to spend a little more here. But do give them everything that they think they need to win, and then make the fan experience good, and the winning will take care of all the marketing that you need. This isn't minor league baseball. I always think colleges should follow minor league baseball. They do all kind of crazy promotions, but that's because they've kind of got a transient game. Of course, we're getting a little bit of a transient game too. But winning is the thing that drives attendance. And when Minji's is full, it's as good as any arena in America. As good as any arena in America. And which comes first, the cart or the horse? I don't know, but there's got to be a way to get those students over here. Feed them, give them T-shirts, whatever you have to do. And then for everybody else, make sure the seats are comfortable and the concessions are reasonable and there are no long lines to get in, even when you have a big crowd. And the parking is as convenient as you can make it. And the traffic leaving the game and coming into the game, you've got it under control. And if you do those things, everything will take care of itself.
No Coach, I think ECU needs to hire you as a consultant, a consultant to the AD. How about that? I'm inspired. I'm inspired just listening to you.
But I put a lot of thought into it, man.
Coach, I had a question, and I know Charles was reading my mind. I was going to wait till after we talked about East Carolina. But I know the guys we've talked about ad nauseum in our group chat about Juwan Howard and the unfortunate thing with Michigan, Wisconsin. Some people wanted him fired. Some people wanted 5 games. Now people are talking about getting rid of the handshake line. But I would say that my frustrations with that was I'm trying to teach my son and daughter right now good sportsmanship.
Yeah.
So we've got a guy that, you know, I think made a bad choice. Why are we going to get rid of the handshake line, which is promoting good sportsmanship just because of one incident? I don't agree with that part. I don't know about the discipline part. I'll leave that up to Michigan, but that part, the handshake line, I'm hearing that. I'm like, why do we teach my kids, like they're 8 and 7 now, about good sportsmanship if we're going to get rid of the handshake line?
Yeah, you can't get rid of the handshake line. I heard Vital maybe said that. Fran Fischilla might have said that. That's crazy to me. Crazy. If you can't shake hands,
Jay Billis said it as well.
Who did?
Jay Billis.
Jay will say some stuff. He'll sort of stir some stuff up. He's got that bully pulpit out there, and he has a lot of opinions about things. And I like all those guys. I've known Fran forever and Jay for a long time. And Vital's been awfully nice to me. He did games on TBS when we were at Auburn back in the 70s, of all things. But before ESPN had gotten started. But you can't get rid of the handshake line. I mean, I've had some handshake lines that were very uncomfortable. But that's my responsibility to go over there and congratulate the guy that just kicked my butt, even if I don't mean it. And you don't have to hug him. You don't have to give him a sincere handshake. You just have to be courteous and move on. And there are all kind of, Juwan Howard screwed up. Greg Gard screwed up. The whole thing was a mess, and that doesn't excuse Howard because he screwed up the worst of anybody. I'm like you. I'd leave that up to the school because they know whether they've had – he did offer to kill Mark Turgeon a little earlier after a game. That probably I guess he was a repeat offender in some way. So, but no, you don't need to get rid of the handshake line. You need to teach your guys to do that. I will tell you this though, in on the women's side in particular, and I don't know how widespread this is, but I think every game that I've done this year, which is, somewhere between 15 and 20, they started in COVID. They started just waving at each other and then going to their separate locker rooms. And they've continued to do that. They don't the games I've been to, they don't do the handshake line. They just all wave and then go to the locker room. But I think you got to shake hands, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bubba forwarded me an article today, and Bubba, I don't know if you were about to mention that.
Go ahead.
Tom Izzo, who is as animated a coach on the sideline as you will ever see. He had some great quotes today, and he said, "There's no chance in hell you get rid of the the handshake line after the game. And what he sort of likened it to is this cancel culture we live in, where one situation happens and the world just overreacts and wants to get rid of everything. And that just sends the wrong message, to just to overreact to that extent and sort of get rid of the sportsmanship aspect. So I love Coach Izzo's thoughts on that. And I'd like to forward you that article. I'm sure you'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I saw some video of him talking about it a little bit, but yeah, I'd love to. And feel free to send it. And along with that, you know, I've been in that situation, you know, but Juwan Howard can't have it both ways. He can't press and then not expect the other guy to keep coaching his team too. If you want to press when you're down 20, then the other guy can call a timeout if he wants to. Two to three or whatever. And Juwan Howard had called a timeout up against, I think he was up like 16 against Indiana in the last minute. He calls a timeout too. You can't have it both ways. Yeah. And if a guy beats me, or if a guy calls a late timeout, I've had that happen. I will say something to him, but not in the handshake line. I'll get him in the hallway afterward, or I'll call him the next day, or the next time we play him, we'll just beat the living hell out of him.
Coach, what about the fact that when I coach basketball, I've actually had a situation where, you know, where you're losing bad or you're up big and you want to get your players in. I've called a timeout just to get some guys that have worked their tails off that didn't get the playing time. So that's the only time I did it, was to get players in the game because we're getting bad, or we're way up like 30 points and I don't want to embarrass the team even more. And so I would call off the dogs the last few minutes of the game and 3-4 minutes of the fourth quarter. And I'd say, hey, let's bring these guys in. And I would even tell them, like, don't shoot threes, all kinds of stuff to try to – so that we wouldn't, like, win by 40 or, you know, like, even more. Like, that I'm trying to run up the score on them.
Yeah, and in college there's a rule for that. And they just say you play on. You know, and the officials know right away that you're not going to have a timeout. You're just going to sub and the game will continue.
Yeah, I thought Juwan came across very poorly there and certainly lost control of his emotions. And like you said, you can't have a double standard. If you're going to coach it one way, you can't expect the opponent to do something different. So I totally agree. And really unfortunate situation. It just sets a terrible example across the country. But hopefully Juwan will learn from it. I thought 5 games was a little light, in my opinion, but that's the decision that's been made.
Here's the thing about it is that he's basically the CEO of the basketball program. And people always joke, but it's true. We don't go back to the school to go to biology class. Those of us that are fans, alum, we go to the ball games. That's our connection still with the team. And if Joe Dooley had done that, as much as I love Joe, I would say, we can't have that at East Carolina, right? And the same thing with Juwan. He said he is, I mean, think about it. He's the coach at his alma mater at Michigan, a big boy, I mean, a brand name program, and doing that. It's not like he's coaching at the Y. No offense to Bubba and those that go to the Y, but I mean, he's not coaching. He's coaching at Michigan.
Oh, sorry, Bubba.
No, I wasn't busting on Bubba really there. I was just saying
I'm offended.
Okay. I'll get a 5-game show suspension. So,
and it busts right over Bubba.
Yeah, no, not it was not intended on Bubba. I'm just talking at that level of Michigan. I mean, it's ridiculous that he's acting this way. Somebody needs to get to him and say, if you want to be the coach of Michigan, you can't be acting this way. It's fine to be passionate. Everybody on this show, on the panel, we are all competitors. If it's Monopoly, a board game, Connect Four, whatever, basketball, my son outside, we're all going to be competitive. But as far as that level, that was just it could have been the thing that worries me, guys. And we'll move on. Is what I was worried about when I saw that line, the video, the fellas sent me in our group chat, Coach. That could have been the same thing, like the Malice in the Palace. We could have had fans out there. It could have gotten really, I mean, I know I'm not trying to overhype it or a hot take, but that was when I watched that with, between Matt and Bubba sending that stuff to me, I said, man, we're lucky. We're very lucky that that didn't turn, as much as I love college basketball, that could have been a tragedy. Somebody killed, something really bad could have happened.
Let me tell you a lesson I learned from a veteran coach, and I didn't appreciate the lesson at the time, but in hindsight, I do. We were playing East Tennessee State. Les Robinson was the coach, NC State's Les Robinson, and he had a good team. We had a good team, and late in the game, the clock was a little slow to start when they had the ball, and I knew the clock operator because I had been at East Tennessee State. So after the game, you know, I said a few words on my way to shake hands with Les. I said a few words to the clock operator. Les didn't say anything. He shook my hand. He kind of gave me a funny look, but he didn't say anything. So he calls me a little later in the hotel. This is before cell phones. He calls me in the hotel and says, I'm outside the parking lot. I'd like to talk to you. And he said, listen, he said, you can say what you want to say, and but you need to be careful about the environment you say it in. Because you were right there at the scores table. Your players were watching. My players were watching. And you said something that was kind of incendiary. And I explained my side of it, that I knew this clock operator. but he brought up a good point. And it was something, again, I didn't appreciate at the time. But in hindsight, I realized he had a really good point. I mean, that was a dangerous time for me to be spouting off and saying something that somebody could have reacted to. One of our players could have reacted. One of his players could have reacted. And it was a very good point.
B-Pays brought up a very, at least to us, it was funny. You know, outside the program, what transpired between John Calipari and John Chaney when Coach Cal was at UMass. I think it was 94, something like that, 94, 95 season. But I just remember, I guess I was like 13 years old. I was getting ready for school when my dad was just dying laughing. I said, what in the world is so funny? And he said, you got to come see this between Calipari and Chaney. And so he said, it's no different when John Chaney threatened to kill Calipari.
Yeah, yeah, that was a classic.
No doubt about it. And B-Pays, are you seeing something? I was looking – he says, we are at war with Russia. I don't know. That's something that it just reminds you of all the craziness going around the world, that a basketball game. That's what I was getting to, guys, before even he put that up there, is that as much as we love the game, it's still, even whether we say it's a game, and I don't want to cheapen it, it's still a game when there's a lot of things like COVID, people losing loved ones. There's a lot of things that are happening out there, and we have to remind ourselves that it is a game. And I teach my kids all the time about self-control is another thing, about control your emotions. I'm telling my son about that because he's a good player in the league he's playing, and there's a lot of kids are taking cheap shots on him now, trash-talking him. I said, hey, buddy, you're 8 years old. It's only going to get worse. I would love to tell him that's going to get easier, but it's not.
No, it's not.
Now, Coach Mack, you've had the chance to see several teams this year. Who do you like, you know, both to be in contention to win it all? And it's pretty wide open, in my opinion. And obviously you have certain teams like Gonzaga that stand out. And then also, who are some bracket busters?
Well, it certainly seems like it's a little more wide open. There's not a clear-cut favorite. Gonzaga, you know, I don't know until they win it. They probably can't be a clear-cut favorite. But Gonzaga, if they get healthy, Baylor, it could still be one. Kentucky is really playing well in a lot of different ways right now. Duke was showing through a stretch that they could guard and score enough to be a threat. They haven't been consistently good lately. Auburn has struggled a little bit lately, but good Lord, are they talented. They are. Kansas is awfully good. I don't know if there's anybody, you know, Purdue maybe in the Big Ten. They score so well. They just don't guard. Nobody with a defense. I think Carolina maybe was the only team with a defense that was ranked that bad that actually won the thing. But Purdue can really score, so I wouldn't count them out of it. The bracket buster thing, I've been trying to pay attention. And ironically, a couple of my old schools are teams that might have something. Chattanooga has lost two in a row. They won tonight against East Tennessee and Johnson City. But they struggled a little bit down the stretch with some injuries. But they've got three big players. They've got D'Souza, who was a transfer from Kansas, and two other bigs behind him. They've got a great guard, who great point guard who's 6'5 and can play anywhere. Be interesting to see if he goes in the portal. But they're a team that, you know, should they get in the tournament, they can't get the at-large. They can't get an at-large bid anymore. They're glad to win their tournament, which they'll be favored to do. And I'll tell you the other league to look for some people out of. The A-10 is only going to get one team in, and that's going to be the champion of the tournament. But the ones that don't get in between VCU and Davidson and St. Louis and St. Bonaventure and Dayton, any of those teams that that were – if they were able to win the tournament, that they could make some noise. That league is – they beat up on each other a little bit. They've got some good teams in that league.
Go ahead, Matt.
Coach, I wanted to ask you, just, you know, you've had a long career, a very successful career. Is there one coach, if I had to ask you, the best X's and O's coach you've seen or that you've coached against? I know it's probably impossible to limit it to one, but if there were a few guys you could mention that you coached against that you were just kind of like blown away by their ability to, you know, execute, their ability to call plays, are there any guys that kind of jump out at you?
Matt Semenza.
There you go.
Seventh grade basketball, Dave. That's right.
The hardest guy that I've ever coached against, and it sounds self-serving to say it because we had a really good record against him, is Bob McKillop at Davidson. I mean, I told our players, and we've had this discussion. We had a reunion this weekend from the 25th year of the team that went to the Sweet 16, and we had a reunion for all the players while I was there, and some other generations. But they, every game with them was like a root canal. It might come out okay, but it was going to hurt. And he was unbelievable. I think we were like 9-1 against him, but but every game it felt like we were going to lose because he was just so good. Their kids were just so well prepared. They took away what you wanted to do. They beat you up. He really comes to mind. And, you know, I coached in the SEC, not as a head coach, but as an assistant at a time where every school had a Hall of Fame coach, every one. Wow. Joe B. Hall at Kentucky, Don DeVoe at Tennessee, Hugh Durham at Georgia, Norm Sloan at Florida, Wimp Sanderson at Alabama, C.M. Newton at Vanderbilt, Bob Boyd, who was at USC before at Mississippi State, Bob Weltlich at Mississippi. Literally every coach in the league was a Hall of Fame coach.
Wow.
I thought I knew basketball. I worked for Don DeVoe, who was a great defensive coach at Virginia Tech. I worked for Sonny Smith at East Tennessee State and Auburn, who was a great offensive mind, very underrated because, you know, he came across as funny Sonny, but he was a brilliant offensive guy. So when I got to the SEC, I said, I know something about basketball. Well, back in the days then, you could scout in person. And we made one trip through the league scouting. And I said, holy cow, I don't know a dadgum thing about basketball. These guys are brilliant. They did things I had never even thought about. You know, I've been coaching 4 years. I thought I knew everything. But I was smart enough to know that I didn't know everything. And the guy that doesn't get enough credit out of that group to me, besides the guy I worked for, Sonny Smith, was Hugh Durham at Georgia. He could do everything. He could recruit. They played good defense. He was innovative offensively. I think he is the one that people don't recognize enough as a veteran guy, that he was as good as anybody we coached against.
Now, Coach, and there is obviously so many stories I'm sure you could share about, you know, Charles Barkley, Chuck Person. But you referenced your reunion at Chattanooga. So as we're wrapping this up, you talk about having coached on T.O., Terrell Owens, and share a story or two about him.
T.O., I may have told you this story before, but when he first got to Chattanooga, the football coach came to me and said, this guy wants to play basketball too. He said, I don't want him to. I'm going to try to talk him out of it, but he wants to play basketball too. And the only way we can sign him is if you agree that he can play basketball. I said, sure, I don't. It's fine. He can play basketball. I had never seen the guy, but clearly he was a great athlete and all that. So that's fine. So the first year, the football coach, a guy named Buddy Nix, who went on to be the GM of the Chargers and the Buffalo Bills, great guy, great football guy, he wouldn't let him play basketball the first year. And T.O. wasn't happy about that, but you know, that's the way they went. But the next year, T.O. had become a star, and he was going to let him do whatever he wanted now. So so he comes out, and the football wasn't very good while I was there. They were the league was really good. Furman, Georgia Southern, Appalachian, the league was really good, but we weren't great. We had a lot of good players, but we weren't great we weren't in the playoffs or anything. So he would come out, and he came out at Thanksgiving. They'd finished their season the weekend before Thanksgiving. And I said, T.O., go home. You know, go on home to Alexander City and you know, spend a week and then come back. He said, oh, no. I'm staying. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to play basketball. Okay, that's fine. So this went on that year and it went on the next year too. And again, I said, go home. Take the, you know, you got to be beat up and tired and worn out. No. So I was telling some of the other players about, you know, he didn't want any time off. They said, Coach, you don't understand. He's staying for the meal money. He's not staying because he loves basketball. He's staying because he can get meal money during the Thanksgiving holiday. So he became meal money to us. We called him meal money. And I remind him of that every now and then. He certainly doesn't need meal money anymore. But yeah. And since I was on your podcast, I had the honor of I was one of the guys who spoke at his Hall of Fame induction. Which was just one of the more fun things I've ever gotten to do. You know, he kind of boycotted the Hall of Fame in Canton and wanted to be inducted at UT Chattanooga. So we did it there. And I got to I was one of the guys that spoke at his induction, which was really fun.
Wow. I didn't know. That's awesome. That's awesome. Coach, before we let you go, we want to sell some more books of yours and tell people how they can buy the book. We definitely want people to buy the book. It's awesome.
Well, we about sold out of the book, so that was the good news. And the bad news is I've shut down the website, so you're just gonna have to email me. You all have got my email. You feel free to share my email, but yeah, if they'll email me, we'll work it out. I'll get in touch with them, and we'll still get. I think we got maybe 30 or 40 books left, something like that. I appreciate you bringing it up, but yeah, we were down. We almost sold them all.
Are you going to write the second book?
Yeah. And Matt, you may not know this, but the book's title was What I'm About to Tell You is the Truth or Could Be. Okay. The next one's going to be called The Truth.
All right. That's great.
Don't get a politician to write it. You want it to be a blank. No. It'll be blank.
No.
I'll have to check that out, Coach.
Good.
There you go. And if you're interested, for those listening, perfect, email us at thesportsobj@gmail.com. For those listening, if you're watching, obviously you can see it on the screen. But those of us that love listening to podcasts, we want to make sure we're fair to them too. Coach, as always, my friend, thank you so much. And I'd love to have you back on maybe during March Madness here. It's hard to believe right around the corner in just a few weeks.
It was fun. Dave, thanks. Bubba, Matt, great to see you.
All right, great to meet you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Well, guys, what a great honor to have Coach Mack on. He's one of my favorites, and he tells it like it is, and whether we want to hear it or not. But that's what you appreciate about him. And, you know, it's funny, guys. There are times when we do shows and we're like, man, you know, how are we going to make it through? And we were going to do 30 minutes. But when you have a legend like Coach Mack, you can't rush the guy. I mean, he's telling great stories. And I know we have a lot of people still watching and that will listen to the show after the fact. But You can't turn him down, right, Bubba?
Yeah, no doubt, Dave. Coach Mack, he's one of those guys that you know, you'd love to just sit around and you know, watch ball games with, you know, and whatever. Just you could talk to for hours about the stories that he had coaching Charles Barkley, Chuck Person, and Terrell Owens, you name it. And there are obviously so many more excellent players that he coached, but those are the three that immediately come to mind from his days at Chattanooga as well as also at Auburn.
You know, besides Matt Semenza, he's another guy I'd love to have a beer with. But you actually like rum, so I don't know if you would have a beer with me, Matt, but He's another guy that could sit and all day long drinking beer and listening to basketball stories.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the first time I've ever had a chance to meet Coach, and definitely love the stories. I appreciated the conversation. I'm just getting started tonight, guys. I feel like I could talk for another 2 hours. So you guys kind of, cut me off a little earlier.
Yeah, I know what the comment Dave's about to put on the screen there. He said, this is the first time B Pace, that is. First time he's seen me on video. It's like the first time he saw Michael Jackson live. Hey, I try to do what I can do.
And by the way, Pace, we want you back on with us again for Pirate Basketball Overtime. That's the longest show, definitely the longest we'd ever done for Pirate Basketball Overtime. And Pace is one of those guys that, that he's real. He's a lot of fun. He loves the Pirates. He's like the guys on the show right now that love Pirate basketball. And guys, I'm praying hard to get it. I will say it again. We said it at the top of the show. Let's have a sellout crowd on Saturday, because Tulsa is going to – I tell you what, Tulsa will be shaking in their boots if they hear how loud that Williams Arena can be. Get your tickets. I'm taking your old bubble. I'm sorry. ECPirates.com, call 1-800-DOLL-ECU. If a guy like Bubba Rosenbaum and his dad Gary, everybody else in the Rosenbaum family, if they can drive a few, like 3.5 hours each way, and you mean to tell me you can't drive across town to see a game? Bubba's like, he said, you live 45 minutes away from Greenville. Are you kidding me? I'd be at everything. But anyway, I'm going to be there. Bubba's going to be there. Matt, maybe we can get you a plane ticket down. That would be awesome. We'd love to have you. But
I wish, brother. I wish.
I know. But there's a lot of people that should be there. I mean, we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people in Pirate Nation that are very close in the ENC, the 252, and that are not in the 252, that in the 919, the 336. I could start 828. I could start doing all the area codes in North Carolina. But get your butt there. The 757 even for in the Tidewater area in Virginia. We're not that far away. There's a lot of great Pirates and all that. So come on out and enjoy the game. Tulsa is a winnable game. It's not like we're playing a team that we're going to lose by 30. We can really – and the difference, guys, is that I really believe our atmosphere at Williams Arena is a difference on Saturday, whether we win or lose the game. I think that's the big factor for me.
Yeah, Tulsa kind of similar to South Florida in terms of they've had a very poor year record-wise, but they're also very capable. They're much more capable offensively, in my opinion, than USF is.
I'm not laughing at you, Bubba. I'm laughing at Johnny Gardner.
Johnny Gardner, white glove from PGX. So maybe I'll get Kaz to send me some white batting gloves, and I'll have those on the next show to complete the Michael Jackson look. But
you see that red leather jacket he had too.
B Pay says UCF's up on Cincinnati 68-53.
Wow.
So I mean, that gives you an idea again. We lost two nail biters against UCF, as well as Cincinnati for that matter. The game in Greenville against the Bearcats, and losing on the buzzer beater, and lost on a buzzer beater at UCF, and then lost that 20-point lead when Brandon Suggs went down. Unfortunately, when UCF was in Minji's. But and kind of going back to some of the numbers, and let's start off with some of the individual statistics, and then we'll take a look at the team numbers. Pirates had three players in double figures tonight, led by Tristan Newton and Brandon Suggs. Once again, Brandon Suggs came off the bench, played 36 minutes, just like he did on Sunday afternoon down in Orlando. Brandon finished with those 15 points, 6 rebounds. Tristan Newton had 15 points, 5 assists, and 4 rebounds. And then he also had TRW on Tremont Robinson White in double figures in 34 minutes. TRW had 13 points and 3 rebounds. You also had Vance Jackson. Vance struggled in the first half and was just 3 out of 9 from the floor in the game, but he did knock down some big shots in the second half, finished with 9 points. As did Zoe Frank. Zoe had, I think it was 7 out of those 9 points in the first half. And then taking a look at the team numbers for East Carolina, the Pirates shot just 34.8%, 16 out of 46, 5 out of 15 from 3, 33.3%. 27 out of 38 from the charity stripe, 71.1%, and that was clearly the difference because USF was just 7 out of 13 from the free throw line, and the Pirates, you know, made 14 more than the Bulls even attempted.
And, guys, I always say one of my favorite saying, Matt, I don't know how you feel about Bubba, your coach too, is always say the difference between a good team and a great team is free throw shooting. I've said that for many, many years, going all the way back in my days of not very good playing. I was not a good player at all, but I was like Rudy, I had a big heart. But that's to me, that's the biggest thing for me is the free throw shooting. East Carolina used to be atrocious. As Matt would say, it was brutal.
It's brutal.
The free throw shooting.
And that free throw shooting, Dave, it allowed the Pirates to overcome on that the
drought.
Yeah, well, the drought. And there were certainly a couple of those for sure. But 43-34, the Bulls out rebounded the Pirates, and then offensive rebounds, 15 for USF to just 9 for the Pirates. And we did do a better job on the glass after halftime. 11 of those 15 offensive rebounds came in the first 20 minutes. But I think that led – I don't have the final numbers, points in the paint, but I know at halftime USF had outscored us in the paint 24-12. And that was something that allowed them to overcome that woeful 3-for-19 from beyond the arc.
I miss Pays. Did you see his comment on Facebook about Frank? He says he's going to get Frank some Reebok pumps. We are the pump.
D Brown.
That's right.
Was that the dunk contest? That was at
D Brown. That's right. He did the eye cover. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, Pays, you're on fire tonight. It's not like you're ever off, but, man, you're really on tonight. It's like he's shooting threes and trick shots tonight. You should be with the Harlem Globetrotters. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, you know, it's not – if you just looked at the stats and you saw we shot 16 for 46 from the field, there's no way you're thinking we were going to win that game. I mean, that's pretty abysmal from the field. But like Bubba said, 38 trips to the free throw line – it's quite a disparity. I mean, considering that South Florida only made it to the line 13 times, and Bubba said, there's your difference. But 34% from the field, not a great shooting night, but our ability to get to the line was really the deciding factor tonight. So there it is.
That combination of 25 more free throws, and then also, in addition to us shooting so many more free throws in South Florida, those offensive rebounds that the Bulls had, that led to the Bulls having 63 field goal attempts to just 46 for the Pirates.
That's nuts. And certainly we got to do better on Saturday at 4 o'clock. I tell you, wow, look at that. Johnny Robertson, that's a great point. USF has yet to have a player score 20 points this season. That's amazing.
And tonight, though, the transfer, I believe, was from Texas Tech to Chua. He had 18 points and 10 rebounds, so a heck of a game for him. And, he's really raised his level of play here recently and had that double-double. And then you also had Murphy. Murphy's deadly from about 15 feet. Yeah. And really athletic, will take you off the dribble. And then that knockdown jump shot off the dribble there from 15 feet in. And then you also had Walker, who got hot there for a time, and he just missed a double-double with 10 points and 8 rebounds.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you're Gregory, I mean, you're literally only have 7 wins on the season. You know, that was my thing tonight. I didn't say to you guys pre-show or in the group text, but please don't lose to South Florida. They've only won 2 conference games and 7 games overall. It's really – and Gregory's a great coach. He's been done a nice job with the program. I don't know what's going on there, but that's not to be this whole show or program about Coach Dooley. If we'd only won 7 games, guys, you know what would happen. And as much as we love Joe. But we've won double that, right? So I hope that I can just keep making comments and that we have nothing to worry about with Coach Dooley.
No doubt. And remember, folks, senior day Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock tip off against the Tulsa Golden Hurricane. Pirates, of course, beat Tulsa out there at the Reynolds Center, something that has very rarely been done. And Vance Jackson knocked down that clutch three. And, of course, J.J. Miles and Vance Jackson will be getting recognized on Saturday afternoon. Hopefully, fingers crossed that J.J. will be able to play. And then you also have, on another note, not related to the Senior Day festivities, but R.J. Felton. It's kind of a day-to-day situation, so hopefully R.J. will be available.
And you get to hear jungle calls from Gary Rosenbaum.
Unfortunately, you will not, because my nephew Lance has a baseball tournament. So if I'm making the trip, or when I make the trip, it will be either by myself or maybe Riley in attendance with me.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Alexander, I know, will be, and McKenzie, they're fired up. They're ready. When they're watching the game tonight, they're ready to see the Saturday afternoon game. So anyway, oh, yeah, that's right. They lost the 7 players in the transfer portal.
Talking about South Florida, that is. And that, yeah, they were absolutely wiped out by the transfer portal. I mean, they lost Alexis Yetna to Seton Hall. And then you lost that averaged 9-8. They lost him to Indiana. You also lost Castaneda to Akron, and he's averaging 12.5 and 3.5 for them. And then you also lost another guard in David Collins to Clemson, who I think he's averaging something like 10-7 for Clemson. So, ton of production.
That's the downside right there. How do you recover from that so quick? And that's kind of like what Coach Mack was talking about earlier. I mean, how do you possibly recover from that many players in the portal? So that's the downside.
And guys, I'm serious when I say this. Are we committed? Are we all in about we can get Semenza down for the tip-off dinner that we have for basketball? Are you in with us?
I'm in. Absolutely. When is this dinner?
It's going to be in the fall, so not right now, but like in what, October? September, October, right, Bubba?
You missed it, Matt. Dave got hired as director of basketball operations. So he's putting this thing together. Coach Dooley's like, what? What's going on?
Well, I think it would be hard if we could sell.
No, I'm just messing with you, Dave. No, it's an because it's something that we've talked about. It's an excellent idea, and there's no reason for it not to be done. And hopefully, we will get it done. I mean, baseball has it. You have 600 plus in attendance. Women's basketball did it at Harvey Hall, and Dave, you said what? There's about at least 250 or 300 in attendance. So there's
They were shocked.
I know, with the response that I got from the alums, guys like Sam Hennett, James Legan, Tony Parham, Othello Meadows, they were so fired up over the alumni weekend. Some of them couldn't make it back because they only knew 4 weeks in advance.
Let's plan it now.
And I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus there, but I mean, that's just the reality of the situation due to the announcement of that in late January, and then the event itself being on February 12th, they just simply couldn't make it back. James Legan did his best to fly in from Chicago, but he couldn't work out the details. But you have so many players, and I mean, you just think about that, players and their families. I mean, you can get to 600 in a hurry, and that's not even, I mean, obviously a lot of fans.
Yeah, and not only that, but check this out, guys. I know Duke and other programs, the baseball program, did it before the student center. I say that what we could do is have a candlelit dinner. You do it at Williams Arena. You have tables on the floor. And Semenza, he says, Paisel, he'll have some crown for you. There you go. But what you do is you put the tables. I'll say this real quick because we're running long. Hey, you have 8 at a table, right? You can do from one length of the floor to the other length of the floor. You can put a whole bunch of tables in there at eight people at every table. I'm trying to say, charge like $25 a person for each, you know, like ticket like that. And then, guys, other programs do it. So let's say that you don't have the $25, you know, let's open the upper bowl at $10 a piece, where you can still, you don't get the dinner, but you still get the program. Where that way, Pirate Nation, there's a lot of people that they can't afford to bring the whole family at $25 a piece, but they can afford the $10 tickets up in the upper bowl. And then that way, that's a way that you can engage the fans and say, we're going to have a tremendous year. Last year, we had a great year. We're improving, but this year is going to be great. And you can be Pays and myself. There are a lot of us. There are DJs, entertainers. Pays knows a lot of people in the hip hop community that would help us out, I'm sure. Right, Pays, I'm putting Pays on the spot there, but there's a lot of stuff that we could do, is what we're trying to say, and we don't have to solve it tonight. But I really want to put it out there. Let's make it happen. There's a lot of businesses out there. If they know about it, a lot of citizens in Greenville, that they would love to be a part of it. That's all I got to say tonight. And get your tickets for Saturday. Get some rest. And I know Bubba and Matt and myself, we're going to be pulling hard for the Pirates on Saturday. And then we'll have our overtime on Saturday night. Right, Bubba?
We will. We'll take a look back at that final home game. Hopefully the Pirates will be able to sweep the season series from Tulsa as they did USF tonight. And you know, if that does in fact happen, then that will be 15-13 for the overall record, and that will clinch a non-losing season at least. And you would still have to, you know, to win out at Wichita State or in the conference tournament to get number 16 to be 16-14. But you know, fingers crossed that the Pirates will come out have much more urgency than they did tonight. And because I think if you come out and play the way you did tonight for much of that game, then you're probably not going to beat Tulsa, because I think Tulsa's a little bit better than South Florida.
Brian, B. Pays says he can play some Jodeci for us. I'll tell you what, Pays, you can get some Rob Bass in there. That would be awesome. Get some of the hip-hop stars you know. You could do a pregame celebration in the practice facility. There's all kinds of stuff you could do before the tip-off dinner, but we'll work on that. And Pays, obviously, we want you involved as well. You're a dear friend of mine for many years, and now helping us out with overtime as well. Guys, do you have anything before we go?
I'm all good on this end. Just looking forward to Saturday. Let's get this. Let's get another win and finish this season off the right way.
All right.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's get number 15 and also finish the year 12-4 at home.
My son's in the rec league championship game Saturday morning at 9 in Williamston, and he's got a tough battle ahead. The number one team, they're the number three team, our team is, and then that's at 9 o'clock, and hopefully we'll be celebrating that and East Carolina victory as we go to the game Saturday afternoon. So anyway, we're going to get out of here. We'll appreciate everybody listening and watching. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Coach Mac. Thank you, Bubba, as always, for all you do behind the scenes. We'll get out of here. Good night, everybody, and as always, go Pirates.